Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This podcast explores what it means to make life less difficult for each other and for ourselves. We share stories of struggles and successes because we believe sharing our stories eases the difficulty of life. I'm Lisa Tilstra, your host. Let's jump into today's conversation. My guest today is Kenza Barata. Kenza is a returning guest, and if you haven't listened to our first two conversations together, I highly recommend them. They're episodes 113 and 119. Today's conversation happened in response to the earthquake that happened in Morocco just last week. So you might guess that this conversation has some heaviness to it, and we certainly felt the heaviness of our hearts. Late on Friday night, September 8th, and extending into the early morning hours of September 9, a 6.8 magnitude earthquake struck Morocco with an epicenter just south of Marrakesh. I reached out to check in with Kenza as she and her family live there and have a farm and homestay just 20 kilometers or so south of Marrakesh. I was glad to hear that they were safe, and yet the devastation for so many is intense. Kenza and her community were first responders to nearby villages, and they continue to put together relief efforts, now alongside the military and international aid groups who are present and assisting. Kenza offered to share her experience, some reflections and stories of what has happened in the first days post-earthquake here on the podcast. And we recorded this conversation on Thursday, September 14, just 6 days after the earthquake hit. At this point, almost 3,000 people are known to have died, tens of thousands are without homes, and many are still missing. In the midst of the tragedy, Kenza shares stories of humans helping humans, people coming together as communities and neighbors. And Kenza shares just beautiful reflections of seeing, in the midst of the challenge, dignity, generosity, solidarity, and hospitality. Please note that some of the stories shared are intense, and if you feel like you may not be in a place to listen or absorb them, please take care of yourself first and foremost, even if that means not listening to this episode. I'll also let you know that our audio quality may not be the best as we had some internet connectivity issues, but really just felt fortunate that we were still able to have and record this conversation. Kenza, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing about your family, your community, your neighbors, your country. Your willingness and ability to reflect on this experience in the first week after it has happened is remarkable and really gives us the opportunity to see into hearts and communities in such a special and unique way. There are many ways to support the relief efforts going on in Morocco. And in our conversation, we talk about the various options towards the end of our conversation, options to support at the international, national, and the local levels. There are links in the show notes in case you would like to donate or support in some way. Kenza, welcome back to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast.
Hi, Lisa.
This conversation came up unexpectedly, Kenza, and it is with heavy hearts that we enter into it. I reached out to you a few days ago, checking in after the earthquake in Morocco that has been in the headlines and devastating in so many ways. And I'm so grateful that you and your family are safe and are in a position to be able to help organize with neighbors to help. And then you put the idea out that maybe we have a podcast conversation to share this and help people know a little bit different perspective about what's going on and how, if someone's interested to provide support, at least one way that they could do that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa, for checking in a few days ago, make sure that everyone is safe here. And thank you for offering your support. And I thought that this conversation would be a very good way to support action here and to support people here, because we can communicate, we can share. And it's also a space where we can a little bit reflect, step back and reflect on what's going on. Thank you for this conversation again.
Yeah. So Kenza, today while we're talking, it's Thursday, September 14. The earthquake was on the 9th, Is that correct?
Yes, Friday to Saturday, so 8th to 9th. It was at around 11 p.m. or 11-ish on the night of Friday. Mm. And since Friday, we've had other, small replicas of the earthquake. So every day there are movements.
Mm. Stressful.
There are areas where they really feel it, stronger than what we feel here at home. But every day, it's still moving every day.
Wow. So how was it where you live? Did you feel it strongly Friday night?
Yes. So I think I was just like starting to fall asleep on Friday. The kids were sleeping. My husband was sleeping. And I was starting to fall asleep and I felt our bed shaking really, really strong. And the first thinking was there is a big truck that's going fast, close by. So the main road to the mountains is really close to our home. So maybe there is a big truck, but then as it was longer than just a truck passing by, I jumped from bed and I'm just like starting just calling my husband, Ramesh. And he just said, the kids. So we ran to the kids' room and I asked him, what do we do? And he said, don't panic them. Don't stress them out. Mm. And we just stayed in their room. And then it basically the intensity decreased while we were with them. So we were ready to move, if anything, but the intensity decreased. So we didn't even wake them up. So as it calmed down, we just went out. We checked on our nanny who was in her room. We were hearing the animals. So we live in a farm, and we were hearing the dogs. We were hearing the chicken who were crazy. Especially the chicken, more than the dogs, and then we started like receiving phone calls. So we did both. So we were outside checking the house and finding out that basically the house was safe. There was nothing, and the house was strong. A few things fell. From the shelves, but like really, really insignificant. Mm. And you know, from the walls, plaster fell in a few places, but really, really nothing, totally insignificant, nothing important in the house. Mm. So we felt safe. And then phone calls, just people checking, are you okay? Are you okay? And say, yes, we are okay. 30 minutes after that, my husband went back to sleep. and my son, he woke up saying, oh, I cannot sleep. There is sand in my bed.
Oh, wow.
I told him, there was a small earthquake, but now it's fine. So I just moved his bed close to his brother's and I put him back in bed. And I stayed outside for like a good 2 hours, just making sure that nothing moved. And I checked every single part of the house, of the doors, of the walls, of everything inside and outside. And also I just communicated with different people, with my family in Casablanca, who was sharing what they're living on here and reassuring people, send messages. So for a good 2 hours. And after 2 hours, we just went back to bed.
Hmm.
So let's say that it was okay here. It was okay. We were not afraid. So it was strong, but we were not panicked. Mm-hmm. The kids didn't wake up. The house was fine, So thanks God, it was totally okay on our side.
Yeah. Yeah. So when then did you start to hear of the damage, the loss of life, whatever the things that were going on? Yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing is that we found out, we had the data that same night. So in the data, we saw that it was a strong earthquake, so 6.8 on the Richter scale, 6.8, very close to 7 out of 10. So it was strong.
Yeah.
And as our main community is either in Casablanca, in other regions of Morocco, so further, so they are not that close to the epicenter. And at that time, they were saying that the epicenter was in another region. It was not totally clear, so close to Agadir, which is 350 kilometers from here. So we were not totally clear where it was at that time. And so the family, imagine like in the urban areas, they were in buildings. So in buildings, it shook very, very strongly when you're in the fifth floor or something like that. It was crazy. So yeah. Everybody was in the streets, everybody was outside, etc. And in the close by communities, the friends who live in the other villages, it shook very strong. So one of our friends, she just left a message and she was totally panicked. And now I understand why. So her house was really damaged. I think the house is probably in a place that, well, on, I don't know. I don't know how to describe that, but the place where her house is, felt it much strongly than the neighborhood, than our place, etc. And she was panicked because she was outside and everything was moving and her kids were sleeping inside. So she was really afraid not to be able to take her kids out. Mm. And then they were afraid for a long part of the night, that slept outside, etc. So it's another reality that people were sharing in different areas. But at that time, we didn't hear anything from that, etc. We didn't know. So in the morning, many, many messages, WhatsApp crazy, everybody calling, etc. Our staff, so we do have our staff in the farm, etc., that were here. So we just were checking on our staff and making sure that people were okay. And then sending everybody back home and say, go back to your family, go back to your place. You shouldn't be here today. Go take care of your loved ones. Yeah. And then my husband and the kids, wear your shoes. Let us go to the village. So we live in a village. Mm-hmm. And let's go to the village and go check on people in the village. Let's start, first physician first. Everybody's safe here. The house is safe. Everybody's fine. Our staff is fine. Now let's check the village. And we went to the village. And there in the village, everybody was outside. So we just met the women and the kids. And we were just checking on everybody. Everybody said, they were afraid, etc. But then they told us that a family lost 3 daughters.
Oh.
This was the first thing that we found out. In our neighborhood, three little girls from 8 to 17 years old.
Wow.
And their room fell on them. Basically, they were sleeping in the same room and their room fell on them.
Mm.
And they are the nieces of the president of the village association. So we were trying to call him. I had tried to call him so many times, but I couldn't get hold of him, and we found out that he was with his brother in the hospital. So basically the first thing that we did, we went to the, I say here we have funerals, so we went to the funeral house. So it was the house of the president of the association. And so we went there. We just saw the mom who was completely out of her mind.
Yeah.
We saw the uncles, the aunts, the manly women, and we just presented our condolences. And then we say, okay, let us go back and we will come back for the funeral when the girls are brought back from the hospital. Mm. So here, you know, people participate to the funerals. So I asked my husband to go for, you know, to go for shopping and shop for the funeral. So mm. the tradition is that you can bring tea, you bring sugar, you bring, normally we prepare meals so that the family for the lost do not cook. But at that time, it was more difficult for us to prepare a meal. So we brought whatever they need to prepare the meals for right. all the people that will come. And so we went, my husband went, and also my husband had, we asked him to stop because some of our neighbors, they had already gone to the mountains to check on people. And they were just discovering what was going on. So they were just sharing. It was totally hectic. And we're sharing information. We have been there. We are just bringing food and water for people. So they go to a village. They found out what they need. They go to the shop, to the store, to the small store in the mountain. And they shop whatever. And they bring back. And they go to another village, etc. So I told him, you know, bag the necessary stuff. Buy the necessary stuff for the funeral, but also buy stuff that we can take to the mountains. Just fill the car and come. And so when he came back, we took, with one of my sons, we took a bag of stuff for the funeral. And we went to the funeral and we sat with all the neighbors. So you can imagine many neighbors from the different villages, they just gathered to the house mm-hmm. to present. So we stayed there. We were waiting for them to bring back the bodies, but they were, it was a little bit hectic in the hospital. So they were not back when we were expecting them. So we stayed there for, I think, a good 2 hours. And then we went back home. And when I came back home, I just met one of my neighbors who had a car, and she wanted to take things to the mountain. So we had, of course, food, but also blankets, mm-hmm. also, mattresses, etc. So we had just gathered what we had, you know, and we put that in the car. And she's French, living in Morocco for a very long time. And we just went, the two of us, to the mountain, to the village that is called Amizmiz, and Amizmiz is 35 kilometers from my place. So just for people to visualize, we are 20 kilometers south of Marrakech. Mm-hmm. And this village, Amizmiz, is 35 kilometers from us, and it's very close to the epicenter. Mm. So time I had found out that the epicenter was very close by. It was in our region, in the mountains, in the villages that are very, very close. So we're very, very close. We're probably 60 kilometers from the epicenter. So wow. We are very, very close by. So we went to the village. So we went to a first village. We arrived, and I was just telling my friend, I told her, let us check the situation. Let us not give everything to the first place that we visit because we don't know what's going on in other villages. So let's support them. So we found out that, yes, the houses had been shaken and some of the houses were damaged. We didn't see any house that had fallen completely. Just like really damaged, and people were outside. So we gave some water, flour, couscous type of things, and then say, okay, now we have to go and see other villages, and then we stay in touch. So we left, and in the main village, there we started to see really significant damage. So buildings were completely down.
Wow.
We saw like big buildings, like four floors that were damaged, like in the basement. So they didn't fall, but we saw the damage and say, okay, nobody can go in. It's very dangerous. And then there we met a guy, he's a military. Oh, so we saw many, many military already. The army was there, but they were waiting for guidance, you know, not for guidance. They were waiting for, you know, clear instructions or where to go, what to do. So they were all there, but not intervening yet. You know, they were just there waiting. So we made a military a coordinator, a young guy, and that was in touch with our friends that were just moving around that village. And he took us to a village where basically they had lost all the houses. All the houses were down, and they had lost 6 people in the village. So 30 families and let's say 5 people per family, so 150 people. They had lost 6 people, and some of them were hurt. They one of the young guys, he had his foot, he has blood on his foot, etc. And the others were shocked because, of course, they are all family. So the 6 people were their siblings, sister, and very close. And the thing that saved this village was that they were all invited to wedding. And in the villages, when there is a wedding, they have a big tent and they organize the dinner and the ceremony in the tent. So the 150 people were in the tent.
Wow.
Finishing the wedding dinner. And the 6 people who died were those who had left the tent before the end of the dinner.
Oh, wow.
So I want to share something is that this first village where we have been, there was a lot of dignity. So people were very grateful. So we gave them all the things that we had in the car, food, blankets, everything. We gave everything that we had at the time. And we don't know what happened afterwards. So the military was there and he was asking them, please just share the things, just share between you, please be smart. And one of the guys was telling me, don't worry, there is only one house that's still safe where we are cooking for everybody. The community was organizing. We felt like these people were really touched. The men like had tears in their eyes. Some of them suffered. They were sharing that one of the guys was not found yet, one of the young guys. The others were buried right away. So they don't wait, of course, you know, stress. So right away, they were just buried to make sure. But we don't know. So we didn't visit the village. We respected their privacy, so we didn't go in the village to visit and to see what was going on. It was not our. We didn't want to go and like have this. You know, in French we say voyeurism. You go and just to see what's going on. So we respected their privacy. So after that, we left and came back home. It was already dark. It was at night, probably around, I think, 8:30 p.m. So just back home, have dinner with the kids, my husband, put everybody in bed. So we just moved the kids to our room so that they are close to us. We left the doors open, so if anything, we can go out very quickly. But again, we were not afraid because people at that day just felt shakes, but we didn't feel anything at home. And, and really the was very strong and nothing compared to what others were sharing. So we were not afraid to be at home. The contrary, other people around us were sleeping outside, and they had been sleeping outside since Friday night.
Wow.
So this was first day. The other thing is that since first day, we were in touch with our, you know, the mountain guides, with whom we do treks, with whom we walk in the mountains. And these kids are amazing. They are cousins, so three cousins, and they are really inspiring. So they are from the village. They all went to study to become guides. They are very passionate about their territory. They know it very well. They know all the villages around, and they have been building their lives. So they have been building a guest house, a first guest house, a second guest house. They host people around the world. They are, they do trekking. So some of them are very, very strong. So they do treks here in Morocco, but they do also treks abroad. So they are trailers, you know. And these guys, we love them and we respect them, and they are very inspiring. So they are, I say, community leaders. But, you know, here again, very simple, very humble, nothing to they don't show up. They just do what they have to do. And the great thing that we love about them is that, you know, they give hope to the whole, to the whole family, kids, etc. So when you talk to the kids, when you talk to the teenagers, they want to become guides. They want to, they, you know, they have a future that they can foresee and say, this is something that I can do for myself and my family. I can, and my life can become better. And even girls, they do that. So some of them, they walk with their wives. So one of them, especially when we go, when we hike, his wife comes with us, Asma. Nice. And we were motivating them for the girls also to go and have their certification as mountain guides.
So
we do respect them a lot. So we were checking on them since Saturday. And we, since Saturday, say, okay, let us come and help. And they said, no, you cannot come. We are the road. Well, it's not a road. It's a, really a small road. And say it is blocked. So the village before us, some buildings fell on the road, so you cannot reach us. They were saying, we lost everything, but we are alive. And I say, please tell us when we can come. So from Saturday to Sunday, many friends walk with them. So many of us, we were reaching out. So we could not reach the three of them. We could only reach one of them. And we organized with him to come to, he said, send six men, bring this and this and that, especially food, their blankets, and come and we will meet and we will walk all together to the village, basically. So our men, six men from my husband and friends, So we went shopping in the morning, buy all the stuff they need. We took, you know, hiking bags, you know, to be able to put everything in the bags and reach them out. And they have been there. And basically what happened is that there was a machine, and I don't know how you call that in English, it's tractopelle, you know, the big machines that can, you know, take out.
Yes, like a bulldozer, maybe we call it.
Yeah, exactly. There was a bulldozer. And basically they asked the guy to just open the road for to their village. And this is what the bulldozer did. Yeah. So basically our men, they just walked behind the bulldozer until they reached the village, and they were the first to reach that village on Sunday. So I have visited the village on Monday, not on Sunday, because I stayed at home with their kids.
Okay.
Sure that everything was fine. So from home, I was mainly coordinating, getting donations, sharing information with different neighbors who were acting in different areas. We were also stocking things at home. So we are close to the main road. We have space. So many people were bringing things here and starting again, and then going to different areas in the mountain. So we worked as a hub since Sunday, a logistic hub, I mean. And of course, we were sharing information because people were looking for food, but not only, they were looking for tents, blankets, etc. At the time, we were just trying to figure out how to help. So they reached the village, and well, let me tell you about the village on the other day when I was there. But when my husband came back, he was really affected emotionally because there he saw the loss for these people, for the villages, and yeah. This guy. They are really, 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 truly amazing. And basically, they have, on Saturday, they were already on the road checking on the other villages. Wow. So they went by car and also walking, you know, and just like checking on other villages so they could give information. So my husband told me, you know, just the village right in front of their village was totally destroyed. Mm. Not a half. Not a house was still there, and most people died, you know.
Wow.
So this was on Sunday, and on Monday we went again for shopping. So you can imagine. So basically we go to the city, we go to the supermarket, we fill the cars, and then we meet with our neighbors. There is a meeting point, an oil station close by. We meet there and we agree on who goes where. Mm-hmm. So there are different villages, there are different roads, etc. And we just agree, and then we split.
Right.
So this is what we did on Monday. So I went with my husband. So I had not gone out on Sunday. So Monday was my first coming out. So the kids were at home. Their nanny was back. They were crazy. They wanted to come, etc. And say, you know, guys, you cannot come. It is first. We are not going to fill the car with people. We want to fill the car with what is useful for this population.
Yeah.
Second thing, it is still dangerous. We don't know, you know, things might fall, etc. Yeah. Third thing, you know, there are things that we really don't want you to, you know, to see right now. You're very young. My oldest son is 9 years old. So maybe there are things that we don't want you to see. We want also to protect you. And then I say, we need you here. We need your help. You know, we are a logistic hub. There are people who come, so you need to open the door, you know, to make sure that you help people, you know, take the stuff out and put them in the stock, and then you can help charge again when the other car comes, etc. So we need you here, please. We need you here. But our second boy, he was crazy. He wanted to come with us, so he stole the car's key. When he gave it back, he just like jumped in the car and sat and said, "I'm not moving from here." And when we took him out, he was like really biting everybody, and like he was really mad, totally mad. So we went shopping in the supermarket, our friends. So we had collected money. So we were thinking about what is the best way to supply the village, our guide's village, with a tent. So there were small tents. So you can imagine, like, the sports stores like Decathlon here, they had no more tents. So in 48 hours, no more tents, no more, you know, material for camping, etc. Everything had disappeared in 48 hours.
Yeah, I bet.
We couldn't find tents. So we agreed that we would buy a big tent. So they're what we call here the Kaidel tents.
Mm.
So these are tents that can host 50 people. Mm-hmm. We use them here. Celebrations, for weddings, for very big gatherings, and they are very big, and they are, they protect from rain, etc. So they are strong tents,
mm-hmm.
and at least they can last. They can use them after that for their celebrations. They can keep them. It's not, you know, small yeah. tent that a few weeks and then done.
Yeah.
So. Some of our friends were looking for a tent like this. The budget for that is around $2,000.
Mm.
So we went for that rather for small tents. And some others went buying, you know, gas, drugs from pharmacy. Some others went to buy, you know, phone cards.
Mm-hmm.
Some went to look for phone charger, etc., because there was no electricity. So this is something important. At the time of the earthquake on Friday, the electricity just shut down. More electricity everywhere. So, and there are some areas where the electricity went off back. At home, it was back during that point, but in many areas, there was no electricity. So, and we went to the supermarket to buy non-perishable food that they could keep for a few days. We met with our neighbors in the oil station. I think there were probably around 10 cars of neighbors,
mm-hmm.
all charged with different stuff. And we just agreed on where the different cars would go. And we just reshared mm-hmm. the material that was there. And at that time, you know, I had talked to my friend, and my friend said, okay, you know, I'm still very afraid, very shocked. I'm at home. I don't want to leave the kids. However, I can help with just keeping the kids together.
Mm-hmm.
So they are together. It was Monday. The school was closed yet until Wednesday. So she told us, let me bring all the kids here so that they can play, they can be together, etc. And I agreed that she would go to my place and take the three kids to her place so that they can spend the day together. So it was also nice for them to not stay at home, and especially for the second one, who was completely angry.
Yes.
So at least, and they ended up being at 12 kids. So she had 12 kids in the garden, in the home, and in the swimming pool, which was really nice. And they really appreciated to be together.
Yeah.
So this was organized. I could be focused on what we were doing.
Yeah.
I think we were, no, two cars. So we ended up leaving some cars in the oil station, and we went two cars. We went to our guide's village. So it's outside of the main village. The main village is Amzmiz. It's the one where I had been on Saturday.
Yeah.
And there it's a little outside of Amzmiz. It's not very far, but Amzmiz is a little bit outside. And there we saw really villages totally destroyed. We started seeing villages destroyed.
Mm.
We arrived to our guide's village, and every single house was destroyed, completely destroyed.
Wow.
So first thing for me was just, you know, to just hold them in my hand, in my arm, and, you know, just to be grateful to find them alive, you know. So just like held everyone and expressed my gratitude for them to just be here and be alive. And, you know, just went to see the wives and checked on the kids, just, you know, just make sure that we are back to be together all alive.
Yeah.
And then I found the main guide, who's called Omar, with whom I couldn't talk since we couldn't reach him out since Friday. So it was the first time in a conversation with him. I had talked to his cousins, but not to him. And we spent time together, just the two of us. So he took me in front of the totally destroyed houses. So it's a small village, so they are all neighbors, it's all same family. So they have the different houses close to each other's. And as they were working, really working well, they had built nice houses. There was a guest house, three floors, where they can host their, you know, their clients before they go hike and walk in the region. We had spent a weekend there with the kids, swimming in the river and having meals with them, with his wife, his sisters, his nieces and nephews. So we really know the family, you know.
Yeah.
And so he took me building by building, and he just explained how they live that, you know.
Wow.
So he'd shake, he just jumped, and he just, his wife was sleeping, so just told her, move, get out of here. So he just gone out from the house. And then they just started to, you know, just look for the other people. So his sister-in-law, pregnant, was there with them. In the other building, his cousin with his wife, four kids, his uncle and aunts were sleeping. So everybody, you know, all cousins, etc., in the different buildings. And just to describe, you know, the house was totally destroyed. So when I was walking around, it felt like a cinema, a movie, you know, decor, right? It felt completely fake, you know, but this house has been there, so there's nothing fake. So all destroyed. You see, for instance, there was one, the living room where we had our meal with everybody during our last visit. So the wall had completely fallen, and we could see the living room from outside. I could see the mattresses and the pillows and everything, and I could see this was the place where we were sitting a few weeks ago.
Wow.
But you could see it from outside, really, like a movie decor, you know, where they place open so that they can record. And he started explaining that, so he went out and his sister-in-law, he told her, you know, jump to the other side and jump from terrace to terrace so that you can go out. So she went out, and then he went to see his cousin's house, which is really the one next to theirs, right? Mm-hmm. And he was trying to talk. He saw his cousin's wife. She was there with the kids, but the glass was closed. The window was closed, and she couldn't break the window. She was trying to break the window, but she couldn't. He told me he just took a stone and he broke the window. And then when the window was broken, she gave him kid by kid, the four kids from the window she gave him. So the window is, it's second floor, right?
Yeah.
So he told me, she was throwing the kids at me, and he was taking the kids one after the other, the four kids,
wow,
catching them. And then she she jumped and he could catch her. And then they went to see the cousin was another building, like really exactly where the ceiling fell. So took him out from a hole in the wall. And then the cousin told me, I was thinking that my parents were dead.
Wow.
And the mother, she told me they were sleeping in their bed and the ceiling fell on them. And they could move. But then they found a hole in the wall and they took them out. And hopefully these two old people, they were saved. So I spent a good time, like 1 hour with him. And he was telling me what happened there. And he was telling me since yesterday we were in the villages. And as we were hiking, we had hiked. So we had spent 5 days hiking. So going from village to village and sleeping in different villages. So he was telling me about the villages that we had visited. And so you remember that village close to the water source? You remember that where we had the pose and you lost your sunglasses and I had to go back to find your sunglasses? So yes, I do remember. And say this village doesn't exist anymore. So
wow.
Basically they were close to a wall in the mountain and this wall just fell on the village. It completely fell. So probably around 200 people died. Wow. They didn't know because at the time,
yeah,
nobody knew.
Yeah.
And then he told me how from moving from village to village, they had found people who were hurt. So they found an old woman, her legs were broken, and they wanted to take her to the hospital in the car, but in the car, they just heard that she was not going okay. So they just stopped and left her with her family, and she died right away. They told her, they showed me picture of people who want, villagers who wanted to bury one of their men. And, the cemetery was 3 kilometers away. They told me they had to put him on a door and put this door on a donkey and then go and take him to bury him. So we were sharing so many stories, so many earthquake stories.
There's so much, Kenza, that you've shared. And one of the things that's coming up for me in reflecting is it's just a few days time, and it sounds overwhelming, and yet at the same time, in listening to you and the stories of the guides, one can't allow oneself to be overwhelmed, because there's so many things that need to happen and lives. And
so basically, on Monday, so basically 3 days after the earthquake, the story had changed already. So this guys, as I mentioned, these guides, they are amazing. So the village, the camp was organized. They had tents for every small family. They had, organized an empty space to receive the big tent that was going to be delivered in the afternoon. They had a tent to cook, kitchen tent, where the women were organized to cook every day. Two women were cooking for everybody, for all the people around, and their kitchen was really well organized. While we were there, here again, a lesson for all of us: the generosity of these people is amazing. They just offered us the tea as they would have done in any other day. And while we were there, so basically we were just waiting for the others to come to help, and settle the tent. We were not there to spend the afternoon.
Yeah.
And while they were going to give the lunch to their people and family. They just offered us the lunch too. So we had tea with dry fruits, and then we had a meal with, aubergine as a aubergine, lentils, and a tagine chicken with patties. And they were checking on us and bringing also orange juice and water, etc., and just like making sure that we are comfortably well in their camp. This was very, very, very touching. But this is them. This is these people, but this is also the Moroccans. Moroccans are like that. You would go to the poorest family anywhere and who has nothing, and they would share with you this nothing. You cannot go to a home, the poorest one, without people offering the tea and at least bread with some oil, with something that they have to offer.
Wow.
Something. So we started discussing between us and telling, how can we help them? We had collected money, we had collected things, so we wanted to help. So we went to just ask them about the association, because they have an association, a development association of the territory, not only their village, but the territory where they walk and work and live. And we started asking them about that, and we started asking them about the bank account, and we started thinking about how to we can create an association to support their association, blah, blah, blah. So, think tank already. The think tank of like people coming from, consulting and business and corporation background.
Yeah.
We went to the couple, Noureddine, one of the guides, and his wife, Nora. They told me, I went to speak with them. He said, they told me, please stop. We are overwhelmed. We are exhausted. So they were all having the tears in their eyes. We are exhausted. We are now in a kind of survival mode. We want to organize things for the village, for the kids, for the different families. We want to settle a little, prepare for the winter who's coming. We're in the mountains. In some areas, it will be minus 10 degrees in a few weeks from now.
Wow.
And we want just recover our minds to be able to think, to gather the people from the association, to have a conversation, a structured conversation, and tell you what we are going to do and what help we need. And they said, the couple told me, we are not just the two of us. There are other people. We want to have a conversation with the other people. And they told us also, we want to be responsible. If we are going to receive money, if we are going to receive support, we want to do it the right way. Which in a structured way, we want to be able to report on how we use this money, these funds, for whom, etc. And there is also another thing that we want to do. We want to make sure that we understand the needs of the different villages in the neighborhood, in the region, in the small region. So it's not only about us, And of course, it's not about them. We went to them because we know the role that they are playing in this territory. We didn't go to them only because of them.
So
it was. So we were in front of dignity. We were in front of generosity. We were in front of solidarity. We were in front of responsibility. All that was there. While we were there, we were having this conversation. Other cars came from people, other local associations who were in touch with them, who were also their clients, and who had hiked with them. And they were bringing also a tent, a big tent, a camping tent, but bigger than the ones that they had. So when they arrived, it's people from Switzerland, I think, and Italy, it's an association called Ordre de Malte. So when they arrived, we agreed that we had to leave because we didn't. They didn't need to have, I don't know how many, 15 people around. And we knew that our friends also were coming with the tent, etc. So we said, okay, they're able to, you know, to set the tent. There are enough people, enough men, enough women that can do it. They don't need us. So we just left. And while we were leaving, you know, this very, very small road that had just been open a few days ago, right? 2 days ago. The day before on Sunday. Okay. We're still there. There were still, you know, stones on the side of this road. And the road was not totally stable. So we went out. And while we were going out, we met almost 10 cars coming the other way.
Wow.
So 4 private cars coming from, I didn't check from, but from Morocco, somewhere in Morocco. And they were full of people. Every car had at least 4 people inside, or if not 5, and full of stuff to distribute to the villages. Blankets, food, etc. There was a small truck full of bread. They were distributing bread. There was our friend's car who was coming with complementary material. And there was our friend's truck that was bringing the tent. So we met all these guys. So we were just saying, hello, how are you? You know, you go, we are leaving. We told these guys that we didn't know who were bringing so many things. You know, the village down there, they are okay. They received enough things. So maybe you can concentrate on other villages. You don't need to go there. Mm. There was also a truck or, you know, while they were there, our friends told us that one of the big hotels in Marrakech, that's called the Fairmont, they had sent many things also to the same village because one of the guys from the village is their employee. So they had things. So we were already... so. We felt they were overwhelmed. We were overwhelmed ourselves, and we were seeing that what was going on in terms of solidarity.
Wow.
So when we went back to the village and bees, the village was, it was another village from the one that they had seen on Saturday afternoon, full of military. The international aid camp was there. I'm going to share just an anecdote, a funny anecdote, because we were crossing the village and I saw a very nice man profile with an earring, which is not common in Morocco. You wouldn't see men with earrings. So it just, like, you know, turned my head to see what's there. So there was the Spanish fireman. So you say, oh, the Spanish firemen. And so I'm just like laughing. So the Spanish firemen are here. It's funny.
Aww.
Tents everywhere, military everywhere. One of our friends, he told us another anecdote. In another village, there were the Israeli trucks who were there.
Wow.
So they just arrived, and who came out from the Israeli trucks? Beautiful blonde women with long hair. You know, this is definitely not something that you would see in Morocco. So we were seeing Spanish firemen and beautiful Israeli women. So it was part also of what was going on, you know. Mm-hmm. So we were just noticing the Spanish, the Israeli, the UK also was there. We've seen also a caravan of cars from Qatar. They had like different cars and the trucks completely full of material.
Wow.
And on top of that, hundreds of cars, small trucks, big trucks, without any label on them, full to the sky with material, with mattresses, beds, pillows, food, you know, and some you don't know what was there, but like, they were full. And I keep this image in my head, you know, the big truck with, you know, the things that were on top, they were covered with a very big Moroccan flag.
Wow.
And many of them had this Moroccan flag on top of the trucks, of the cars, etc. And, you know, the road, so when we were back home, this road that we use all the time, that's not very, very, very heavy on traffic. It's, you know, a road to the mountains. It's not crazy. There are people who go there, some tourists, and of course, the normal traffic. But it was crowded, traffic jam, with dozens of cars, if not hundreds of cars, that we had met in, that we met in like 40 minutes from the village to our place.
Wow.
They were just like going to help in the villages. So solidarity was there. And we felt like, okay, we are the neighbors. We are the closest. And we were there since the beginning. We were there on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now it's Monday. The story has changed. Now the state is there. International aid is there. The national solidarity and international solidarity is in place. Now, let us step back as neighbors to also recover, to think, to organize, and see how we can support in the long term. So we went back home. We just spent a good hour with the different friends and neighbors to just share how we felt and what everyone wanted to do or not do or be or not be.
Yeah.
It was just sharing our impressions, our feelings. And then say, okay, now we agree it's time to step back a little and maybe also spend times with our families, with our kids, and just let things settle.
Mm.
We all agreed that there was a momentum and we needed to get funds for these people to help them in the long term, not only now in these 3 days. We were also wondering, what is our role? We are just private people, individuals, neighbors. We are not associations. We are not the state. We are not international organization. So what is our role?
Mm-hmm.
There's a place in all that. So then... yeah, we just had dinner with our kids. We put them in bed. We told them that the other day we would stay here. We would stay with them. It would be like Tuesday, no school before Wednesday. And then on Tuesday, it was interesting because we were here. We didn't move out. But then all day long, we had people coming and going, coming and going, in and out. So as I mentioned, we suggested to be a logistic hub for people to bring things and then to take them out to the different villages, mountains. So we freed a room for all the food because in the villages they told us we have enough food. We have more than enough. Please stock for us. And let us have a conversation in 10 days or 15 days, and we will tell you what we will need, but not now. We have enough. We received also tents. So one of our friends, some of our friends, they organized, fundraising to finance tents. So that same night, back from the village, a truck with 500 tents slept here safely. The driver slept here. Then he left at 6 a.m. with 400 tents to distribute in the different villages. Our friend, he came around 10, to also charge 100 tents that he had to take to specific locations. We kept some of the tents that had to go to different villages in the neighborhood. And then they brought food, and then I don't know, like people Cape Town come in and go in all day long, which was very interesting also for the kids to be part of this activity, to contribute, open the door, charge the different cars, the different trucks, and also they see all these people. Some of them are friends, some of them are their friends' parents. Some of them they didn't know. So we had this this movement at home all day long. And we had people, of course, having tea in the morning, having lunch, having coffee in the afternoon. And so we had a table also full of things all day long. So this was on Tuesday, I think. Yeah, Tuesday. And yesterday, again, so kids went back to school. It was only half school, half day school of school. So we agreed with my husband that we had lunch with them, that I would spend time with our little son to make sure he has a nap. We would take the two eldest to their activity. So our oldest son, he goes to horse riding, and he wanted to go to see the animals, to see the club, to see how the club was, how the animals were, etc. So we agreed we would take care of our kids, of our of the family, but also you know, to keep the logistic hub working, and also to connect with our local village association to understand their needs, to understand how and to structure the next steps, and when we can meet with our neighbors and all the friends that are acting in, since Saturday, and say we can coordinate and organize, and also just check on each other's and step back. So we agreed that on Friday we would gather everybody here. And also there was something quite big going on. I don't, maybe you didn't follow, but there was a very big media crisis. France is one of our closest partners because of the historic relationship. We were French protectorate during the colonization era. And so we're still, of course, very close to France for so many reasons. There are many Moroccans who are half-half, like me, Moroccan, and also French citizen. There are many French citizens who live here. So we are very close, but due to political reasons, and there is a political crisis for, that has been going on for a few months now, Morocco didn't authorize the French intervention. They authorized Spain and UK and Qatar. And I don't know, but they authorized French. So you can imagine that the French media were just crazy. So we don't have TV. We don't watch the French media. We don't read, because it's our choice. It's our life choice. It's not our choice since the earthquake. It's, we do live like that. But all of our friends, they don't watch the Moroccan TV and media. They just like follow the French media. And you can imagine how Morocco was, according to people, and it's not my words, according to people, they felt like Morocco was humiliated by the French media. Only showing people who were in the mountains and saying that the state was not there and the state was not helping and nobody was there to support them, etc. They were only sharing this part of the story, and they were not sharing the other part of the story. So people were, oh my God, you know, this is not the reality. This is not what's happening. What's happening? We want to share. the dignity. We want to share the solidarity. We want to share that Morocco, not only the state, but people from Morocco here and abroad, and not only people who love Morocco, those who live here, those who have visited Morocco, etc., they are here, and we are able to manage, you know, that's okay. It's our own country, and we are able to manage it, and we are managing. It's okay, you know? And then, of course, you know, the French president and former ministers and ministers, they also communicated and say, we do respect, we are at your disposal if you need us and in any way you need us, etc. But the population was mad of what they had. So now it's kind of, there is a media crisis. So when the president talked on the social media, everybody was mad at him, blah, blah, blah. Well, so this is the back office. So many people say, okay, let us communicate, of course, through social media, but let us communicate through different ways and share the different stories, not only one part of the story. Let us share the whole story.
Yeah. So
it is part of the reasons why we are communicating right now.
Yeah.
And it's very important. I mention again the international solidarity that we have seen here. So when I say we friends, neighbors, etc., Moroccans who were born and grew up in Morocco and raised and lived here, Moroccans from second generation who were born and raised in other countries and are back from France, from Belgium, from different countries, but also all the foreign people live here in our neighborhood. We have French people, Belgians, Italians, Spanish. Every single person was underground. Everyone was doing what they could, anything, you know, small drop, as you said. Everyone was doing what they could, what they wanted, what they, their energy and network and means would help them to do.
Yeah.
So we've seen a huge solidarity, not only between urban and rural and mountains, not only between Moroccans, between every single person who lived it, but also who love Morocco for any reason.
Yeah. And it really is beautiful to hear another story, right? Another perspective, because the media tells one perspective, and to just, you know, hear your story and your anecdotes and what you have seen and witnessed, and the dignity and the generosity and the solidarity and the coming together of people, neighbors, both the, you know, local and then also the international aid coming in so quickly. It just makes me think, you know, it's these moments that we come together as humans, right? And we have all these other labels and this and that, but it's humans. It's humans responding to humans in these times, and that is what is so important. And there's where the beauty comes out of the tragedy.
Yeah. And I think when we started to discuss at the very beginning, before we started the recording, I mentioned the hidden gift. So these are some of the hidden gifts, you know, when you show up together as population, as country, as humanity, you know, one of the guys, Martin, he told me, you know, tears in his eyes, he say, now we feel that we matter.
Wow.
We feel that we matter. You cannot imagine that all the things that you are doing, you being not me, and you, all the people who have been supporting them and checking on them, just calling them, just asking them what they need. And people from around the world, you know, they are mountain guides, so they have had clients from around the world. And see, the person who came here only once in their lives, they just checked on us. And this makes us feel that we matter for the rest of the world.
Wow.
It's very, very strong. Mm. Yes, they do matter. Mm. They are not alone, and they do matter.
Yeah.
Single person matters. It's very important. You know, it's one of the hidden gifts there is. So when you hear, you know, the scientists, they say that this earthquake shaped the Atlas Mountains. So the Atlas Mountains, the peak is 40,000 meters. So it shaped, you know, there are two tectonic
plates.
Yeah, exactly. The African and the European, they just chocked. So when they chock, they just let the mountains go higher.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shaped the mountain, the Atlas Mountains. And this is how the mountains have been created for the history of our planet. And this is how our planet has been shaped. So this is nothing crazy from the planet's perspective. This is how it works, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy from the human perspective, but it's not totally normal on the planet's perspective.
Yeah.
And as it's shaping, can you imagine that we are one of the regions that suffer most from the drought, from water scarcity, and new sources of water have come from the earth, come out from the earth. So there are new water sources that just appeared, which is a huge gift for this country. That's really suffering.
Wow.
From drought, climate change. So it's one of other gifts. The other gift that we are just foreseeing, I don't know, we will see what happens in the future, is that now there is a big Marshall Plan. So Marshall plans, the plan of rebuilding after the world wars. So there will be a Moroccan Marshall Plan after that. So the country will be rebuilding, not only the villages, but many, many things around the mountains, around villages, around the rural population. From conversations that I had yesterday, they are expecting 1/3 of this region's population to move to the small cities and villages who are more structured.
Wow.
And 2/3 to stay. But for these 2/3, they will rebuild villages, different villages, in maybe different locations where they can have access to roads, to water, to education, to healthcare facilities. So there will be a rebuilding. We will see what will happen. I have no idea. But these are the conversations. We will rebuild.
Wow. Yeah.
We will see the hidden gifts as we move, right? We don't see them all right now.
Yeah. No, and it's really, I think it's a gift that you have to already notice some of those hidden gifts and to share those perspectives. And I know when a disaster like this happens, when a tragedy happens, there's all these different perspectives of it that, you know, you've mentioned quite a few of them, and then, you know, over time they shift and change, right? I mean, and that's even come out already in your story in just a few days. It in the first few days after this happened and immediately after, you as the neighbors in the community were just starting. And then a couple days later, okay, there's more help coming in from afar with more supplies, and we need that, right? But that immediate kind of like first aid is critical to getting to the more extensive treatment and longer term plans. And I know that it will continue to shift and change over the days and weeks and months and even years ahead.
Yes, and it's very interesting because also our place, our role will shift and change, you know.
Yeah.
I've seen interesting articles on the role of the local communities and the closest local communities, like really the neighbors. This urgent action and fast action right after a tragedy, right after a crisis, only the locals, the very, very close locals,
yeah,
can provide this help. They can act because they know the territory, they know the people, they can have access to anything, you know, supply stuff, whatever. Just the fact that we knew these people and we had cars,
right,
we could change the story right away. But then, after a few days, our role had to change, mm-hmm, because more structured help was there. People, you know, intervention with the army, with the engines, with the trucks, etc. Mm-hmm. They were already in place, and it was dangerous. You know, every day it was still shaking, so it was dangerous for us to be there and to, you know, to block the action of structured interventions, mm-hmm, and it was also dangerous for our lives. And then the state started to be very, very afraid of pandemic diseases. Yeah. You know, there are so many people under the demolished houses, you know, mm-hmm, that are not buried. And well, I don't want to share all that because I have been there, so I don't know, but they say it's started to smell. And so if it's starting to smell, that means if people are around, etc., we can have diseases. He just shared a dream about cholera. Imagine that. If we get out from earthquake to start with the pandemic of cholera in the country, this, yeah, is terrible. So we have to also to have this intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not about mind intelligence, about the even spiritual intelligence, and say, okay, my role now is to step back, mm-hmm, and to let more structured, yeah, interventions happen. And maybe there is another role for me as local community, as neighbor,
yeah,
that I can shape, that we can shape together for the future. Because everybody, no, not everybody, many people will just forget about this in a few weeks from now, but we will not, because we live there. We are locals, we are neighbors, we are involved. We will not forget. We are here. So we are going to be here and we are staying here. So our role is still there. We'll still be there in the future.
Yeah.
Which role? I don't know. I'm not able to gather 50 million euros. Gad Elmaleh, who was one of the Moroccan humorists in France, and he's amazing. He can gather 50 million euros. Mm. A foundation can gather billions, maybe. Mm. A state can send money. I cannot, you know. I can tell you, we've gathered, poor families, we've gathered, I have the numbers, 10,000 euros,
mm,
which is okay, mm-hmm, for the first day. It's more than okay for the first day.
Fantastic.
And as our guides association is ready to get the support, we will send them this money, mm-hmm, right? As soon as they are ready. But we don't need to buy 10,000 euros of food or 10,000 euros of mattresses. When you see the trucks full of mattresses, etc., that are arriving, it's not anymore our role.
Right.
We can step back. The other thing that is interesting is that on the longer term perspective, it's also humility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Be humble, you know. So at some point, you just look at these people, at these guides, and their association, and as at what they are doing right now and say, who am I to come and tell them, you should do this and this and that? Mm. They know much better than I do.
Yeah.
Especially these guys and these women who are inspiring and smart and really they are great, especially them.
Yeah.
So I'd rather think my role differently and say, let me be at service rather than be the one who leads. No, they can lead and I can be at service. They can use me the way they want to use me, the right way. So yesterday, so we were talking to a foundation, a big foundation in Europe because of friends of friends. And I reached out and say, okay, they want to talk to you. Are you willing to talk to them? And he said, yes, let us talk to us. Let them come when we are ready to receive them. So let ask them to call us before and we will sit and we will have a conversation. But I don't need to be there. It's not, they don't need me.
Mm.
You see what I
mean? Mm.
They don't need me. So I'm just like sharing information and facilitating. And then at some point I can go back and say, how do you need me?
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way for me to help, but from your perspective, not from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's so much wisdom and humble wisdom there. Like you said, that word humility is how can you be asking that question, how can I support rather than saying, I want to do this or I'm going to do this. That just that humble, like, no, how? Like you all have the perspective, you all have the expertise. So how can I? And speaking of that, Kenza, if somebody's listening and they do want to do something or feel like they can give something, be it some money or whatever, what do you recommend? What are the options? Is it okay if somebody would reach out to you who's, you know, not local? I don't want you to get bombarded with
There are two ways that we have been sharing with people asking us. There is a national fund that has been put in place by the state, by the national bank,
mm-hmm.
that is receiving all the big donations and small donations locally and internationally. And this will support the rebuilding of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they had in place, so it's a sovereign fund.
Mm-hmm.
And this sovereign fund had been put in place during COVID and it worked well and it helped support people, etc. So this is a very good way to support.
Mm-hmm.
And we can share the link to the sovereign fund.
I'll put that.
If people are willing to contribute more locally to the action that we will have with this specific territory, which is called Asgur territory, through the association, the development association of our mountain guides, I suggest that they reach out to me until the association is ready to receive the donations directly.
Yeah.
And I will explain why they're ready right now, because it's very stupid. All the paper, the admin mm-hmm. paper of the association mm-hmm. has been buried in the yeah. house.
Wow. Yeah.
So they have lost the documentation with the number of the association. They are not able to create a bank account right now to receive the donations, etc.
Right.
So we are committed for all the money that we receive right now to give them as soon as they are ready to receive it. That means as soon as they are ready to have a bank account. So I do collect myself, and we have a very transparent file with all the donations that we have received, all the things that we have bought for them since the beginning, and all that is left will be given to them.
Mm.
when they are. So these are the two ways. Of course, there are other associations, foundations. There are 10,000 ways to give. And if people are used to working with the Red Cross or with XYZ NGO, they can also give through XYZ NGO
right.
To the Special Fund for Morocco Earthquakes. So, of course, I have many who have given to their regular associations.
Yeah. Well, and it's really, I think, this is where some of the hidden gifts come out of the generosity of humankind and the resilience and the coming together during major tragedies like this. And I know a lot of people want to give and have different comfort levels of giving either to the international or the national or the more local individual kind of giving. So it's nice to have options. I will put some links in the show notes to the national fund so people can find that and also a way to connect with you if they would really like to connect and give something on that very, very local level.
Yes, exactly. That's great.
Kenza, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Please take care of yourself, and I would love to follow up and hear the stories. I mean, this is like to be continued. Yeah. And I know you've been on my mind completely apart from the earthquake of wanting to follow up, because we have more conversations to have and I have more questions.
Women leadership.
Yes, exactly.
I remember we were supposed to have a conversation on women leadership. Maybe we can have it after the earthquake. Well, let's see how women react in the villages, in the mountains around us, etc. So this can be a very rich conversation when it's time to have it.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm so grateful for this connection and just really grateful for you taking the time and being willing to share these stories from the first few days.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa, for your support. Thank you for listening so deeply and actively. And thank you for sharing, people around the world. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation and episode of the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. Editing is done by Joseph Burdock. Artwork is by Emma Burdock. I'd be honored if you took a moment to share this with a friend and or leave us a review. Together, I truly believe we can make life less difficult.